Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Eudalie Wickham Ashby. And today, I will carry the conversation focusing on blindness, special education, and a whole lot more as I talk with my very good friend, Arvel Grant, the Chief Executive Officer of the Caribbean Council for the Blind, based in St. John's, Antigua, a regional body that does tremendous work on behalf of persons who are blind and visually impaired in the Caribbean diaspora. Welcome to the program, Arvel.
Hi, Eudalie. Thanks. I'm very, very happy to be your guest. You know, we go back a bit. I look forward to this.
Thank you. So let's start by telling me a little about yourself. Who is Arvel Grant?
I was born a long while ago in a little town in southern Jamaica. And I was born with something called corneal opacity, which means that my eyes did not, and still today, do not filter light very clearly and in a very transparent way. So I started life being blind, and I've had the privilege, really, of having great parents. My mother and father believed very deeply that, you know, even if you didn't have hands and feet, if you got a good education, you'll do well for yourself and your community, which is something that especially my father believed in, that whatever you do, whatever you become, you should find a way of serving your community. And if you can't do it in the community, do some work with government. He always said that, and they did everything they could. My mother, you know, made sure that we got a good education. And in my case, it turned out that I was able, with the help of good friends in government, one of my first jobs was at a very junior level in the office of former Prime Minister Michael Manley. And Mr. Manley himself took a keen interest in my development. He thought that I had a good head on my shoulders. Those used to be his words. And he made sure, with the help of his permanent secretary, that I got a nice scholarship to the university. It was mostly paid leave to the University of the West Indies Mona campus. Did back then a Bachelor of Science in Social Work. And then I did postgraduate things in public administration and a master's in public health. And those subsets have really informed my work in Jamaica, across the Caribbean, and around the world. I've had the privilege of intervening directly in almost 80 countries. And I'm eternally grateful to those parents and indeed the taxpayers of Jamaica for helping to put a good set of gray matter between the temples. And so I've used the skills and competencies as much as I can to work with governments across the Caribbean, into part of the Americas, into part of Asia and Africa, with NGO facilities in the United Kingdom, Germany, Canada, in the United States, to try and make sure that the quality of life for people who, not only who are blind or who have low vision, but people who have special needs in any sector, is better and gets as close as possible to the quality of life that people without special needs have in their communities. So that's me.
That's a big lot of you. And I have to say thank you for the fabulous work that you have been doing, not only in the region, but as you said, across the world. You're impacting and influencing lives and making positive changes. So we really want to say thank you for that level of work. Now,
there are other parts of my life, if we get time, I'll tell you about, but that's the part I want us to start with.
Okay. And I'm sure that those other parts are just as intriguing.
Well, time will tell.
Okay. So let us talk now about your leadership as the CEO of the Caribbean Council for the Blind. When did you start, and what was it like in those early years working with CCB?
Well, I tell you that I got into the CCB thing a little bit sideways, because in my early life, I thought of myself as a bit of a political activist. I even joined one of the local political parties in Jamaica. And I spent a lot of time doing street level work, organizing, getting people to register, getting people to attend group meetings, those kinds of things. And that kind of got me in another way involved in this blindness thing. And so I got myself elected to the board of the Jamaica Society for the Blind. And I think we had a little bit of an activism before that in a group called the Progressive Blind Association in Jamaica. And we used that little group to kind of harass the establishment people in disability services. We kind of made sure that we kind of looked at what they weren't doing right a lot more than what they were doing right, and highlighted a lot of it, you know, using our political intentions and interests, and worked our way to a point where we got the attention of government officials around issues relating to blindness. So back then, I was in my 20s, and the idea was to try and use advocacy as a tool for change. That is the thing that got me interested in an advertisement I saw, or that was brought to my attention in the Jamaican papers sometime in the early 80s. They were asking for someone to do international work in the Western Caribbean and all the way down to Belize and up to Bermuda. I applied and I got the job, and somebody told me 2 or 3 years later that I got the job not only because I had the gift of the gab, but I was asking for the lowest salary. So that kind of got me into this blindness thing very early. But in terms of my direct role with CCB as CEO, just over 20 years that I've been in senior management, and I have seen a lot of changes in terms of how not-for-profit organizations have evolved. In the not-for-profit realm, much of our work is around projects. So you have project cycles. So we go from implementing a project with, say, some NGOs in Europe or with the European Union to doing something with the what used to be CEDA, now Canadian Global Affairs, to doing something with USAID. So you end up with a whole range of multilateral and some bilateral experiences implementing projects around blindness prevention, special education services, adult services, and indeed institution building services. I give you a quick synopsis of some of the things that we really have used those relationships to do over the last decade or two, and even beyond. We were able over the years to work with what was then the Micro Teachers College, now the Micro University, to put in place the first regional training program for teachers of the blind and visually impaired. We used that program to train just about 78, 79 teachers from countries right across the Caribbean, including in Barbados. My good friend Mona Carbin, Mrs. Elaine, a number of persons from Trinidad, Guyana, throughout the Eastern Caribbean, throughout Belize, throughout the Bahamas, would have been trained in that program. And so our whole thrust has been to use the systems that exist to transform into providing services for people who have special needs. Similarly, we work with the Canadians to build out our own regional rehabilitation program, in which we trained more than 200 rehabilitation specialists across the Caribbean to go into people's homes and teach them how to live with blindness, teach their families how to cope, how to live and to function with blindness. More recently, we've done a really wonderful program with the European Commission and Sightsavers, in which we spent almost $10 million building out a very impressive network of eye health services across the Caribbean. Under that program, we were able to put in place eye health systems, clinics, eye clinics in 30 government hospitals across the Caribbean, from Haiti through Guyana into St. Lucia, Jamaica, Belize, doing those things that would ensure that people who have eye health related issues can go to a health center or a district hospital or indeed a tertiary hospital and find eye health systems in place that would not only equipped with the right types of equipment, but staffed with people who are appropriately trained. Under that program, we were able to establish the first or one of the two optometry training programs in the Caribbean. First was established with some lobbying effort from us and our partners in the international community in Trinidad. The University of the West Indies took up the mantle and established a Bachelor of Science training program for optometrists in that country. But in 2010, we were able to work with the government of Guyana and the University of Guyana to put the Bachelor of Science in place at the University of Guyana. And one of the things we wanted to do with that program was to move Guyana from having just 3 optometrists for a population of 750,000 people to a place where Guyana would have 1 optometrist to about 5,000 people. I'm delighted to say that we haven't gotten to 1 optometrist to 5,000 persons in Guyana as yet, but we're well nigh there. We're moving from 1 optometrist to 250,000 persons in 2010. We are today, as we speak in Guyana, we're 1 optometrist to about 11,000 people. And I think in the next 1 or 2 graduations, we will be on par in Guyana to what obtained in the United Kingdom, which is 1 optometrist to about 4,000 or 5,000 people. So it's the kind of thing that we like to do. We like to use the systems that are established, put structures in place to get our programs advanced. And as we speak, we're in negotiations with one of the medical universities in Jamaica, and we hope by next year to launch the 3rd Bachelor of Science program for optometrists in the Caribbean. And we're pushing on. We hope to push through Belize, Bahamas, and we want to put 2 programs in the Eastern Caribbean as well. So that's how we do our work. We look for structures that exist, and we work with those structures to include facilities that would address the special needs of people, whether it's preventing people from going blind or helping people to learn to live with blindness and visual impairment.
And this is excellent work, because we do need these special programs to help with the development of persons who are blind and have low vision, their families, you know, the professionals who will work with blind and visually impaired persons. So this is indeed great work. Now, you mentioned the special needs or the special education program. Let's talk about that and how that has significantly improved the educational levels of children who are blind and low vision.
Let's go back and come forward. When we established the regional training program for teachers of the blind and visually impaired at the MICO in Jamaica, there were no training programs for people wanting to do work in that area across the Caribbean. But we knew that it needed to happen. And so in order to prove that it needed to happen, we went systematically through the Caribbean, the English-speaking part of the Caribbean, and identified with ministries of education those teachers who have an interest in working with children who are blind or visually impaired, or teachers working with children who are blind or visually impaired but who were not trained. And we had programs like in Jamaica, there was a school for the blind. In the Bahamas, they had a program for children who are blind. At Santa Cruz School for the Blind in Trinidad, but they did not have teachers who were specifically trained to work with those teachers. What we did at CCB was we looked around in the Caribbean for a country where we could take over 1 or 2 floors of a hotel once a year. And because the exchange rate was so wonderful in Guyana at the time, every year for 3 or 4 years, we would move 60 or 70 teachers across the Caribbean into what was the old hotel, Tower Hotel in Guyana. And we would run these special education teacher training programs for a month to 6 weeks so that teachers who were already trained as generic teachers could learn special skills in working with children who are blind or who have visual impairment. That, I think, pivoted to a point where every Ministry of Education knew that there was a great need for this service. And by the time we worked with Columbia University and Perkins Institute in the United States to scholarship a Jamaican woman, Dr. Celine Giles, she was then an undergraduate with a Bachelor of Science. We were able to work with Columbia University and the other institutions in the United States to scholarship her. She came back and was able to lead the training of the teachers from across the Caribbean. And that then put us in a place where we no longer needed to have these crash program type operations each summer. They were quite expensive, but they were quite useful. And just imagine paying airfares and accommodation for 60, 70 people, plus all the resource people, and shipping in the training materials and all of that. But it turned out to be transformational stuff. That became one era and was replaced by the regional training program. And that program really spawned the development and strengthening of special education services for children who are blind across the Caribbean, from Guyana right down to the Bahamas and swinging left to Belize. Today, we are in a very advanced place where we are developing an online undergraduate training program for special education teachers, not only special education teachers working with children who are blind, but special education teachers working with all of the 10 established categories of special needs children. We're using the downtime with COVID to build that out in a very aggressive way. And we believe that it will be totally transformational, because any teacher who wants to become a special educator working with children who are blind or children who have other special needs, as long as they have good internet connectivity, they will be able to do a very strong degree from their home in their countries of domicile. And to go along with that online program, we're preparing a template of an agreement that we want then signed with the respective ministries of education to make sure that there will be access for teacher training practice in each of the countries across the Caribbean, so that the credibility and quality of the training which these teachers will receive online will be second to none. So we think that having done the work historically, retrospectively, we are poised to enter a completely new era in which training of special educators from across the system and indeed in other parts of the world will benefit from what we're doing here in the Caribbean.
And that leads me on nicely to the area of rehabilitation, because the two will go together, teaching our children who are blind and low vision in education, but also the orientation of how do they travel independently, how do they maneuver within the physical environment that they live in and the communities, you know. So where is the rehab program now where CCB is concerned?
Let's go back to comfort again, because I think that is one of the strongest issue of commitment on the part of CCB as it evolved the new generation of programs. Earlier, when we talked about the Bachelor of Science for Optometry, I should mention that a strong component of that optometry training program is a module called Low Vision and Blindness. We believe deeply that every person who specializes in the treatment, management, and control of conditions which cause blindness should not only be good ophthalmologists and optometrists and optical assistants and refractionists, but they must have a good sense as to how to do the introductory work with a person who is low vision or blind. So when an optometrist coming out of Guyana program or coming out of the Jamaica program or coming out of any of the other programs that will emerge, sees somebody who is end stage visual impairment, whether it is from retinitis pigmentosa or glaucoma or diabetic retinopathy or macular degeneration, those conditions which cause permanent incurable blindness in the Caribbean, that optometrist really ought to know what to do in terms of the introductory elements of working with somebody who is blind. So we're not now building out only standalone training programs for people who are blind, but one of the gaps that we've noticed over the years is that the professionals who treat blindness, who prevent blindness, did not have a keen sense of what their role should be in respect of moving somebody from loss of sight to learning to live with blindness. And so we began since 2010 by fixing that, by planting in the training of optometrists, planting in their heads and in their skill sets the basics of orientation and mobility, in addition to having advanced training in working with people in terms of low vision, of orientation and counseling. That's the first part of the solution. And that's going very nicely. And I might add that our program in Guyana trained optometrists for Guyana. We've had graduates from Dominica, St. Lucia, Haiti, Jamaica, and all of those graduates have gone into their programs with those skill sets in low vision and blindness. When we, the evolution of the inclusive education degree that we're developing for online purposes, that will have a strong 35% of the course content of that will be in terms of not just adjustment to blindness training, but learning to work with people who have other challenges, including ambulatory challenges, hearing-related rehabilitative needs. And that will begin to be the way we look forward to changing the status quo in respect of access to what you refer to as rehabilitation services. What I think more and more is being referred to rehabilitation counseling and rehabilitation studies, those are being built into the training programs at all levels. One of the things that we hope will happen is that a component of the offering online will be a full-length degree program for persons working with special needs adults, because that is an absolutely critical requirement. When we developed back then the regional rehabilitation program for persons who are blind, one of the things we realized is that many persons who are blind have additional challenges. 99% of the people who are blind became blind as adults. And many of them have become blinded because of hypertensive conditions, cardiovascular challenges, diabetes and diabetic retinopathy. And as they get older, those conditions introduce some issues relating to physical challenges, some issues relating to hearing, some issues relating to mental challenges. And so when we look at how we prepare these people, when we look at what we do in respect of training for working with adults who have special needs, it really must be a multifaceted approach. We no longer can defend the business of training somebody to work with blind people, but they do not have any introductory skills in working with other persons with special needs. And so we're working aggressively to move to a place where all of that training takes place from day one. If you're being trained as an eye health provider, you have at least introductory competencies in terms of working with people who are adults with special needs. If you're being trained as a special needs educator, you take not only the skills in terms of working with children into the program, but the skills in terms of working with adults. And when we build out the online programs for working with adults, we also want to be sure that those are multifaceted programs. We believe deeply that the individual with special needs can be a powerful contributor to his or her own development, the development of his or her family, and the development of his or her community and country. But unless people get the adaptive skills that they need to function in an equivalent way to people who have no overt challenges, then they can't rise to those standards. And we need to get them to rise to those standards as a matter of course and as a matter of right.
Arville, it usually happens that when we're really getting into a deep and good discussion, time catches up with us, and it's happening right now. So in your closing comments, share your thoughts.
Firstly, I want to thank you for the opportunity, because the audience in Barbados and the surrounding islands are very important to the work that we do. So on behalf of our president, Carrie-Anne Ifill, and the other directors of CCB, thank you very much for the opportunity. We hope that you will allow us to do this again. But in closing, I'd just like to say to people, family members, and friends and acquaintances of persons with special needs, stand with them. Do all you can to make sure that the opportunities are created for them and help them create their own opportunities. And especially in this time of COVID, help people with special needs keep their distance. The people who are blind can't see that you're too close to them. You really need to take the initiative and make sure that social distancing is observed. Make sure, if you have special needs or otherwise, that you wear your mask and you keep those hands clean. If you do that, you know, get vaccinated at some point before too long, you should avoid COVID. The work that we're trying to put in place now post-COVID will benefit you immensely. Thank you very much, my lady.
Well, Arvel, it really has been good sharing with you, learning about the work of the Caribbean Council for the Blind, and as well as learning a bit about you and your own contribution as you developed as well. So I want to say thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Udalie Wickham Ashby, and I want to say a very special thank you to all those individuals who contribute to donate items, household furnishings, clothing, and so on that are redistributed to vulnerable persons who are in need. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or via Starcom at 1-246-430-7300 and via email visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. So until next week, be safe, be good, love yourself, and love your neighbor as you love yourself.